Katie Hunter from MA UK. I'm here with Ian Gary. Ian, great to speak to you again.
Likewise, how are we?
I'm brilliant, thank you. How are you?
Good. Really good today, actually. I'm in a good mood. I just dropped James back to the airport, James Webb. So good seeing him. It's the first time I've seen him in a while, so I'm in a good mood.
So how much training is he able to do at the moment?
That's the first time I've seen him in a while. He's doing stuff, a lot of rehab stuff back home, because obviously the illegal spike kind of messed up his shoulder or his neck. But he's coping with it. I mean, it's an injury, but no fighter wants to get injured. You know what I mean? I broke in my last fight, and all I wanted to do was punch everything that I could see. So it's not nice, and I know where he's coming from, but it's one of those things you just have to deal with, and that happens in the sport. So, but it was good to see him. It was good to see him, because he's a bit of banter, as you know yourself.
And for people that don't know, that happened at Cage Warriors Night of Champions back in June. And it was a card that you were supposed to be on. Sadly, that fight with Teo Adonjo fell through.
Nightmare.
Days before the fight? Was it even days?
2 days before the fight, yeah. I got a call. I like to fly over a day early to the fight. So I just don't like the idea of flying the morning of a weigh-in. I'd rather be comfortable, sit in bed, and enjoy kind of lying down and resting, rather than getting up at 6 or 7 or 8 and going and getting on a flight and weighing in the same day. And as I was on the way to pick one of my friends up just before I'd left the house, literally leaving to pick him up, Chris called me and said, "Look, here's the story. Hold your opponent's out, blah, blah, blah. They're going to try to get you someone today and we'll know." And look, no one said yeah. Smart, rightly so, because a day's notice taking a fight is dodgy against anybody, but against me, it wouldn't have worked out against anyone. So.
And when they say we're trying to find you a replacement, do you just say, "Great, I'll fight anyone"?
I did. That's what I said.
What did your coach say? What did Chris say?
He wasn't very. To be honest, he kind of understood where I was coming from, because Chris knows more than anyone what it's like to have a fight pulled. I think he's had 6 maybe in the last year and a half pulled on him. So he understands the frustration and the aggression and just how annoyed you can be and how annoying the situation is. So when I was saying I'll fight a light heavyweight, he was like... All right, and I looked at the lads were fighting for the light heavyweight belt, Madas Bukowskis and Hamlet, and I was like, thank fuck, I didn't, and I wasn't getting in there with someone else. Oh, they're big, to be honest, if someone had to come back and said, 93, I would have been all right, let's do it. I just want to fight. I don't really like. This is where it's Chris's job to be the boss.
Yeah.
I just want to fight. I don't care who it is. I literally couldn't care if they put me in there with a heavyweight. I'd still go in and do me, and that's the attitude I have. And I've got to carry that into everything. And look, I'm not going to stop someone on the street if I was at a nightclub or something like that, and he comes up and he starts going at me. Hey, what weight are you? All right, I can't. You're too big. So. In the mental aspect, I would have done it, but probably best that it didn't happen.
There's no records of the street fights, are there? So
I'm 0-0 in street fights. I've never ever had a street fight ever. I think I'm one of the only fighters out there that can say they've never had a street fight, because a lot of people like to talk shit on nights out and come and say, I'd take you. I just leave. I don't drink that much lately. So when I go on nights out, I'd be getting annoyed because people would be talking, burning the ears off me. Normally I burn the ears off people, but it's likewise when I go out now and I'm sober, so I can understand it. But No,
I find it's the people who've got like a little bit of training that are the worst. They've got enough to think that they'd be handy in a fight.
Yeah, and they start talking to you then, oh, I train MMA. And you're like, do you? Once a week, every Wednesday, I train MMA. I learned a high last week. So, but no, yeah, I would have fought anyone. But when they said they were trying to find a replacement, obviously Ian and Graham have to go off and text and contact other people and see if there's anyone that will kind of bite the bullet, really, because that's what you're asking someone to do on a day's notice. So realistically, it probably would have been about a middleweight or a catchweight, which I'm happy about. Like, I stood on the scales anyway at 171, so I'd made weight anyway. But you're never going to be able to get someone to put that weight in that short time if they're welterweight. They're going to have to be fight at middleweight, which is okay. So I would have fought anyone, but no one said no, and no one said yes, and I completely understood it. Me and Chris knew we weren't really going to get it.
Yeah.
So it was just a bad situation that you kind of had to make the most of. And I talked to you that night after then.
Yeah.
After James's fight, it was a bit of my blood is boiling after that fight, but simmer down now and I was a bit aggressive then.
I thought you handled it magnificently. You know, like, it's easy to be practical when it's not happening to you and say these things happen in MMA and, you know, like, it's nobody's fault. But when it's happened to you and you've been in fight camp and you've made all the sacrifices and you were on your way to making weight and you stood on the scales anyway, and your teammates get into a fight that night and you desperately want to be in there more than anything.
I know.
It would be very easy to throw your toys out the pram, and I'm sure you gained a lot of respect with the management at Cage Warriors for the way you did handle it.
Well, I'd hope so, because when I made the choice to go professional, I have to carry the same mindset and the same kind of professional act, if you want to put it, whatever way you want to call it. But it is a hard situation. It wasn't easy. I mean, behind like closed doors, I was nearly punching drywall. It was that frustrating. Yeah. And like my friend who came over with me, Adam Shelley, could just see the frustration in my face. But like, no one, I had to deal with it, because I'm kind of one of those people, and I noticed myself, and this is why I didn't I didn't retaliate or get annoyed. I just kind of brushed it off and just done me. It was because I always, anyone who knows me or knows I bring a certain energy, like I'm always happy, I'm always dancing, I'm always singing, I'm always that kind of loud person in the room. But that's the way I've been. And I feel like if I'm not like that, it'd throw kind of the team off.
Yeah.
I had to kind of just be the bigger man and just put the blinders on and just think about it and just go forward and be like, look, so the way I think about it is, it was 10 or 12 weeks of training that wasn't wasted. It's only going to carry on to this fight now. And it shows that no matter what, I'm just here to do my job at this thing.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking forward to it. I finally get to hopefully go in again. Hopefully. I say hopefully because I've never had a fight camp. Teo Odunjo was the first time I've actually had someone agree to fight me. And I think was going to be there that week. Because normally people are pulling out. Or when that amateur people would pull out, they said no, it was hard for me to get a fight. If I did, it was on 2 or 3 weeks notice. And I was filling in for someone else. And it was great, but no one wanted to fight me. And then I took a short notice pro debut against James Dean as an animal. And I was like, look, I'm just going to go balls to the wall, jump in, dive head first in and see what happens. And then I was like, right, great. We actually get time to sit down, plan a fight camp, go through strength and conditioning, work myself to where I know I'm going to be as best as I can be. And then 2 days before, the fight got pulled, and I was like, that. Oh,
is that, is that a normal way to start a pro career, to take a a short notice fight and just jump straight in? And
no, probably not. But me and Chris had the idea for a while. It was getting to the point that amateur where it was so hard to get fights.
Yeah.
That people just didn't want to fight. And I, like, even at pro, Chris is telling me to slow the horses, to slow down. And I'm like, no. Like, I keep saying, I'm here for a good time, not a long time. I don't want to be fighting twice a year. I want to fight 4 or 5 times a year. And I want to get where I'm going. And I want to get out quick. I have a pretty face. I know that. I want to keep it like this. I want to get in and get out as fast as possible. Okay. I'm not in here to get scarred and cut. So, but no, we were kind of ready. We were always training. So obviously I've got Chris, I've got James, I've got people like Conrad Ivanovsky, Paul Lawrence. We've got a lot of pros in the gym.
Yeah.
I'm always doing kind of 5-minute rounds with them. So I was already, and we decided that was good. It was beneficial for me to start doing them because we knew where we were going.
Yeah.
So Once that opportunity came up, he rang me and I was like, let's do it. Let's go. Let's just do it. He said, don't think twice. And he was actually quite nervous. He said this to me because if I had a loss, it was all on him because it was his call. Whereas I was like, no, it's grand. Don't worry. I've got this. Let's just do it and you'll see. Everyone will see. And me and James went in there and put on a hell of a fight. And I'm going to give him a shout out because he is probably one of the toughest people I've ever met. So my respect goes out to him. And now I've got to go and see does someone else earn the respect now on September 6th.
Let's talk about that fight because you're on Cage Warriors Unplugged. First of all, I want to talk about how you think that experience will be being an invitation only kind of event where you're used to having, like, whooping the crowd into a frenzy. How do you think it will be in a smaller environment?
Well, the way I've been kind of looking at it is I'm a big personality in a small room, so I'm just going to take over. That's more or less the way I'm thinking about it. The bigger the room, the brighter I can shine type of thing. So, like, I've been fighting since I was 10 in halls, in GAA clubs and football clubs all around Ireland and PE halls and stuff like that. So fighting on a smaller venue with less people doesn't bother me. Fighting on a massive card in, say, Wembley with 20,000 people wouldn't bother me. It's all the same to me. As I said, the blinders go on when I fight and it's all about what happens in that cage. I've learned my lesson before going in and thinking about everything else. It doesn't work out, so you just got to keep your mind focused on one thing and one thing only. And once that fight's done, then you can enjoy it.
So you're fighting Martin Harris, who's already got 9 pro fights to his record. Yeah. You've obviously only got 1, but you've got a much bigger amateur record.
Yeah.
How do you think his experience or his pro experience is going to play out in this fight, or you don't see it having any impact at all?
No.
He's fought some like big names. What? He's fought Nathan Jones and Alex Lahore.
Steve O'Keefe. He's this is why I'm happy to be fighting him, because he's fought. He's not okay. I'm sick and tired of looking at people fight people who have 2 or 3 fights and start claiming they're the best in the world or they're some of the best in Europe when they fought known. They're fighting lads who are 0-2 or like 2-2 who have fought nobody. Martin's record may not be the best, but he's fought legit lads.
Yeah.
Like some of the best in Europe when you look at it. Like I was looking at Tapology there before we done this interview just to brush up my things. Alex Lahore is the 4th ranked in UK and Ireland, which is basically Europe when you think about it, because it's Cage Warriors. Nathan Jones, I think, is 20th or 24th. Steve O'Keefe is up there as well. They're 3 massive names in the MMA scene. So he's fought them. Yeah, okay, maybe he didn't win. Okay, but that's those group of Alex Lahore and Nathan Jones. They're the type of people that are at the top of the welterweight division at the moment. And they're the type of people I want to be associated with, the same names.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm happy to be fighting him. He's not a guy who's gone in and fought nobodies and done nothing. He's fought legit guys. He's experienced. if I make a mistake, he's going to capitalize on it. So I've got to go in there and be smart. And likewise with him, like, he's not going to, he's obviously looking for a win. So he's thinking, right, we're going to fight this guy. So he knows that I'm dangerous. And if he doesn't, he's only fooling himself. So it's a fun way to look at it. But to answer your question, no, I don't think his extensive pro career is going to have any impact on the fight. Yeah, he may have had more 5-round fights, but I'm 1,000,000% fitter, and that doesn't bother me. Cardio is my strongest suit, so it could be 40 rounds, and I'd still be fresh. So.
And what about the pressure on you? Because so much of the MMA media, like particularly in Ireland, but in the UK and like all over, are talking about you. You've got, well, I'll come on to like you going viral worldwide later on, but like just about your abilities in the cage. Like, I don't think a single week goes by without Sean Sheehan bringing you up on the Severe MMA podcast. Like, how do you handle that pressure? Because you just seem like nothing fazes you at all.
No, it doesn't really, to be honest. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the attention. I'm not saying I don't, or I'm not saying I love it. I see it all, and I absolutely, like, it's amazing to have people realize what they're saying is the potential, because no one really knows what it is. It's still fresh to kind of the professional scene, so it's potential, and it's lovely for people to see it and talk about it and get excited about the upcoming fights and stuff like that. But it doesn't really faze me, because I've got good people around me that keep me grounded. And if you start getting big headed in our club, or with the people that I'm friends with and my family, they're going to shoot you back down. Okay. I guarantee you now, if I start going around thinking I was all this and all that, Chris would go, right, that's it. You're getting a hiding tonight. You know what I mean? That's the type of way it is. Like, and that's why I love my club, and I love all the lads in my club and Team KF, is because people don't blow smoke up each other's arse and be like, you're the best in the world. There's gyms out there that are all talk, that are yes men, they've loads of yes men, they hype people up, and then they get sparked. So, well, not even they get sparked, they just don't live up to the hype, and then it's like a hype train derailed.
Yeah.
We don't do that. Like, yes, I have potential. Okay, that's evident. I mean, I'm working my ass off. I'm training hard. I've done what I've done, and I'm going to keep continuing to do what my mind is thinking anyway. And people in the gym see that. They don't blow smoke up my arse in a sense of saying, oh, you're going to be the best in the world. You're going to be this. You're going to be that. They'll come in and they'll congratulate and win. They'll say, you look phenomenal. You look great. When's it? Because once something's done, we don't think about the past. Yeah. It's all about the future. And that's me. That's me. I've got it tattooed on me now and all. It's done. It's official. The future.
So what is the future then? What is the medium term and long term goals? What's the, first of all, what does the rest of this year look like?
Busy, hopefully. Let's start that. I've said it to Chris. I've made him aware of my plans. He again told me to slow down. I said no. I want to fight as much as I can. So I want four fights. So the Teo fight would have had me at 2-0.
Yeah.
This one then, and then there's three cards. There's four more events that I would have been able to get on. So in my mind, I'm one down. So I need to get in, finish this fight quick, and then have a quick turnaround in either Liverpool or Cardiff.
Really quick turnaround.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'll fight someone at middleweight. I'm okay with that. I'm a big welterweight. Like, I'll fight someone at middleweight if they want to go. But we have to see how the fight goes, basically. So, but I'd happily fight. Liverpool is 3 weeks after, Cardiff is 5 weeks after. I'll happily fight either of them, and then I'm 100% fighting on November 22nd. Me and James should have lit London up back in June. We're going to make sure we do it in November. So I want to get in, hopefully get two more fights after this one, and finish the year 4-0. That's my plan. Look, if I don't, I don't. I'm not going to beat myself up about it. It is what it is. Got to take it home. But that's what I'd like. And if that's the case, then happy days. If not, look, we'll just have six next year.
And what happens if you run into the same problems at pro that you did at amateur with just getting people to accept fights with you?
Then I'm going to have to start opening my mouth, which is something I don't want to do. Because I hate people that go out there. For example, Kobe Covington's a perfect example. Because out there, talks a load of shite. And then, talks a load of shite and then gets himself a fight. Fair enough. People like to see that. I'm not like that. I don't want to be going out calling people out. I want to leave that to Ian Dean. He's the matchmaker. He's the best at what he does for a reason. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, he's look at all the fights he's made. Obviously, between himself and Graeme, they decide and they come together. But, like, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. So,
if it comes to that, I will start having to open my mouth. And Chris and Tom won't like it either, but it's the only way it's going to happen. But I don't want to do that. But if they start saying no, and hopefully it doesn't, because I'd hope that the lads have a bit more bottle in them than they did. So, I'm hoping for that. I'm hoping I don't run into the same problems. If I do, I'll deal with it when I come to that. But I don't want to think about it that way.
I would have thought for any welterweights out there that, you know, if they really, really believe in themselves, you've got a big name, a lot of hype behind you. To me, if I really believed in myself, it would be a great fight to take to kind of get a lot of eyeballs on you.
To end up on a highlight reel.
Exactly, yeah.
That's exactly what would happen. On a highlight reel. In a couple of years, when I'm fighting for a UFC title, when all goes well, and they replay this devastating KO, and you're that guy that they look back on, going, that was you, mate. So, that's why. In a nice way.
So, the UFC is obviously the long-term plan.
Yeah.
How far off do you think that is? If you keep packing in these fights, How far off is the Cage Warriors belt, and then how far off is the UFC?
Well, the thing that annoyed me most about Teo pulling out was I made a bet with James saying I'd beat him to the title. I'd do it faster. So it's kind of set me back a little bit. So I kind of want to knock that off and restart fresh. But that was a little joke that we had. I kind of take it year by year. That's the way I'm looking at it. I don't want to overstep or overthink the future. I want to take it year by year. So this year I wanted 4 or 5 fights. That was what I set out at the start of the year, and that's what I wanted. Down the line, I think, like, you look at the likes of Ross Houston, for example. He's sitting there. He's the champ of my division, and he's now 8-0-1. There's no contest with Albie. So, if he's 8-0 and he's not in the UFC, I'm assuming that maybe 9-0 is a good record. I mean, he should be in the UFC after that fight. I think him and Dalby both deserve to be. I can understand why Dalby is obviously getting the favor because of the Denmark card and him being dangerous like that. It just makes sense. But I think if I keep doing what I plan on doing and winning and I start finishing people the way I know I should be, I think the hype will be a lot bigger than most people. So look, I wouldn't go and say that 2 or 3 years isn't realistic to be in the UFC. I've said I want to be in the UFC before I'm 25. I'm 22 in November, so if I'm there before that, that's all a bonus. That's extra time added to the clock.
Yeah.
Or taken away, whichever way. I want to get in, get out. So whichever way you want to look at it. But no, UFC is obviously the goal. That's why I signed with Cage Warriors. If I was in it for the money, I would have went to like a Bellator or Brave or something like that. But I'm not. I'm in here to fight the best, to make a name, to try cement myself in mixed martial arts legacy, like make myself a legacy and leave something behind that people go, ah, he ends up there, won it with some of the best. Now look, the dream, we have to work before we get there, but that's the end goal kind of thing, is to be in the UFC, and Cage Warriors is the best platform on the planet to do that. Sure, that Dalby was there 92nd or 94th, something like that. Something ridiculous.
Anyway, yeah, nearly, yeah. I think nearly 100 more fighters. Than that, yeah.
Yeah, nearly 100 fighters into the UFC. I don't know another promotion in the world that has done that. So,
how far off do you think James Webb is?
Should be there already. Should be there after that decision win that he just had. That was a draw. James has got a fight in... He's confirmed to fight on November. He wins that, he's gone. James brings a good crowd to every fight. He has a good following. He's a great, great fighter. He has a certain game plan that a lot of people enjoy. His game is fighting style isn't the most enjoyable to watch. But that's not his that's not his job. You know what I mean? His job is to go in there and win. Tell me now, his last fight was absolutely brilliant. Tell me, it was 5 rounds of, oh shit, what's going on here?
Yeah, so, it's like, a bit nerve-wracking, isn't it? When you're 100% on somebody's side.
I was, like, me and Chris said this, I was ready. I was actually, like, ready to jump that cage and go because I was like, into the fight. That it was just taking over me because I get more nervous watching fights than I do fighting. Because I don't get
that. Yeah, I'm sure.
I walk into the fight, I'm like, yeah, you get to have some fun. That's the way I look at it. Because, I mean, if I was to go out and pick a lad on the street and box him around, I get put in prison. Okay? Whereas some lads agreeing to fight me on a televised where loads of people are going to see it. And I get paid for it. Sign me up. That was my that's the thoughts behind it. But I think James is very, very close. I just think it's all about timing. Same with Ross Houston and Dalby. Dalby's gone now because it was the right time.
Yeah.
I think
for James as well, if it did happen after November, they usually do, if they were to do UFC London. It's normally around Paddy's Day in March, so.
Well, this is the plan. So this is where it all kind of falls. This is where life falls into itself, and you just have to let it run, take its course. He wins at London. He's in my mind. He just has to wait for UFC London or UFC Europe in the right venue. Obviously, they have to come and approach him, but I wouldn't see why he shouldn't be there. He's definitely up there with the caliber of opponents in the UFC. I mean, I could easily see him beating lads that are already in the UFC handily. Yeah. So, yeah, it's all a matter of time, really. He just has to go in there, get the next job done, and then once that's done, he can think about that.
I definitely think for the weight class he's in as well, they're crying out for,
exactly.
for more people in that weight class. So.
They need bigger lads.
Anyway, let's get back to you.
I'm okay with that.
I want to talk about the video of you that went viral because, oh my God, it really good. Made me well up. how many views has it got like now? It's over a million.
It's over a million views. I haven't checked in a while. It's still getting reshared kind of day by day, but like, the initial spike of interest was like, it had a million views in 2 days. Ridiculous. It has like 3 million impressions on Twitter. And like, it was just, I was sitting there, I was in work. So I posted it. And the next day in work, I worked to do window cleaning. on a Monday and Tuesday, just to keep a little bit, an extra bit of cash. I'm young. I don't need to be training all day, every day, all week. So I get a little bit of cash.
Don't fall off the ladder.
Exactly. I'll just stop. That good. Too quick. My phone was literally going, and I was like, I hear what is going on. And then I started getting messages from like radio stations and like all this stuff. And then it ended up on Ariel Helwani's show.
So sorry, for people that don't know, explain to them about the video and the tattoo that you had.
So basically, I'll move the phone here. I got a tattoo that says, imagine. My granddad has dementia, and it's a trigger. So whenever I say, we were sitting at my 21st birthday last year, and my nana said, oh, like, imagine that. And he goes, click the fingers and goes, imagine. That's a great song, that is. I just started singing in the middle of the restaurant. So
he's got a great voice as well.
He's a good singer. He's a good singer. He's not as good. He likes to think he's a bit better than me, but we'll have that argument now soon enough.
Yours is good too.
he says I get it off him, so I'll give him that. he says I get his looks off him too, so that's debatable. We'll see. But it basically, the tattoo was because every time I see the word imagine or I hear the word imagine, I think of him when he sings it. Because obviously dementia is, it's not easy for families to go through, and like, he doesn't know my name, so he calls me the big fella. So once he hears the word imagine, though, you've seen it in the video, he just instantly starts singing. So it's just something that is, it's got a lot of personal meaning to it. And I didn't post, my mom came home to me and was like, Ian, someone in work told me if you would have posted that on YouTube, you would have got like thousands of euros. I was like, I don't care about money. I didn't post the video to make money. I posted the video because it was a great video of me and him, and I thought other people might enjoy it. And I know dementia has obviously affected so many families worldwide, because all you need is your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your aunt, your uncle, anyone, one person in your family, doesn't matter who it is, you'll realize how hard it is and the struggles behind it. So it just took off and got some serious, it went viral. Like, it was mad. And I was baffled by it. And so many people were texting me, giving me like lovely heartfelt messages, being like, oh, like, my mom has dementia, and like, she's gone now, and I just hope that you cherish every moment with your granddad, because there will be a day where he comes and he might not remember you at all. And it was just lovely to kind of hear everyone's kind of stories. And it was mad, and it got me a lot of publicity for the right reasons, for just being kind of, not for being an asshole and talking shite, for just being me, kind of thing. So,
and that was your I was trying to cover that up there. Nobody's looking at me. And that was your first mention on Ariel Helwani's show.
Well, first
won't be the last.
First for the moment. Hopefully, we'll get a lot more in. No, I was texting him. He was absolutely lovely. He was really interested in it. And he was just asking questions about it. And he just, like, Ariel was a top bloke. I mean, I watch his show every week, and it was mad to kind of see it.
I love that he showed the
video, and everyone was saying it to me then. Like, I had loads of people text me going, Ian, you're on Ariel. I was like, oh no, I texted him last week. I didn't say anything. I wanted everyone to be surprised. So, It was madness. And I'm happy for my granddad, because he thinks he's famous now. So he goes to a club every week and does like, they do like shows and stuff like that. And he loves karaoke. So they seen the video. Normally, I'm only allowed like one song, and he got two because apparently he's famous. He's a VIP now, so he was loving life, telling me about how he got to sing two songs and not one. So, no, it's a great moment that I cherish forever. That, like, every time I hear the word "imagine," it just reminds me of him. So, it was special, and I just enjoyed that. I enjoyed the fact that everyone enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
And I also don't.
Beautiful yeah. moment. And I think it's nice you touch so many people. Like you say, people messaging you about their mums and stuff. They're probably people who aren't even into MMA.
No, so. That's the best part about it. It's shown people, and that's exactly why I was. It ended up on Ariel's thing is because it is a good. It's shown the good in the sport. People yeah. see a lot of stuff, like for example with Connor. I'm sure you've seen that video with Connor. People yeah. see it. See, yeah, exactly. The size shows it all. A lot of that stuff, they see all the shy talk, or they see the John Joneses or the Conor McGregors. But what they don't know is that there's so many fighters out there that aren't like that, that are just yeah. good people. I'm not saying I'm good. I'm just saying in general. But there's good people out there.
You had a good moment.
Yeah, exactly. I had a nice moment for once. But that are just good people and that are showing that our sport isn't full of like knackers or scumbags or like we're just normal blokes, normal women, normal people who just enjoy the thrill and the adrenaline of fighting. And luckily enough, we can make a living off it if all goes well.
Yeah. So
that's what that's why I was happy it got a lot of views, because it shows people the good in the sport as well.
Yeah. And what people need to remember as well, I think, is that just normal people just being good or being nice every day isn't particularly noteworthy usually. So,
yeah. Well, it is.
There are 100 people doing nice things versus.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of people that do lovely things every day. Like you got your kind of one good deed a day thing. Like there's a lot of people that do that don't get anything for it. And
yeah.
obviously I kind of had planned to go in and surprise them with it and hope that the video would end up the way it did, and it just turned out perfect. But I just think it was a great video to show that we're not kind of the stigma that everyone has behind us, that we are just genuine people who just love a scrap, basically.
Yes.
More or less.
So let's get back to your scrap. It's on September the 6th. It's invitation only, so people obviously can't buy tickets to come and see you for this yeah. one, but they can watch it on BT Sport, which is amazing because usually yeah. it's only on Fight Pass now. So I feel like you could get really big numbers for that one. It's going to be a great fight. Do you want to do shout outs to any sponsors or anyone at the gym?
Oh, I have to give it Jesus loads of sponsors, so I have to carry over all the sponsors from the last one as well, because I'm loyal. I don't want to do anyone any bad. I want to make sure I keep everyone happy.
Yeah.
But there's too many people to name in all my sponsors. I'll have a sponsored bar and sponsored t-shirt on the night. And I just want to say thank you. Everyone, they all know who they are. On my sponsors, they've looked after me exceptionally well. And I want to thank them all for everything. Shout out to all them. Shout out to everyone at Team KF, obviously.
Yeah.
Without them, this wouldn't be possible. I mean, Chris and Tom have set up a gym that is just, it's reaching levels that I don't think we even thought that we'd reach this quick. We said it, but I don't think we really thought it. And now it's happening that we're going to take over Europe pretty soon. We have a lot of lads coming through. We have a lot of Amis that are going to turn pro over the next kind of year, maybe. Once they get a bit more experience, and we're going to take over. PT Carroll said it as well, that we're going to be one of those super teams that you see on every show that just can't stop winning. And you know what? I'll take that. So, no, just a shout out to everyone that kind of sends me messages and wishes me well, and anyone who has a part to do with my training or just making me laugh every day, because at the end of the day, you kind of need to have the good people around you all the time, not just some of the time. So, no one, look, I just want to get in there. September 6th, land in London, put on a show, get in, get out early, and go party.
I'm really looking forward to the Team KF takeover as well. I've met all of you guys, met some of the other guys at Brave as well. So, it's been lovely getting to know you all, and just really, really looking forward to the beginning of the takeover coming on September 6th.
The future.
The future.
The future. That be getting ready for the future. And everyone should get ready for it because it's coming. It's inevitable. I have a tattoo that I haven't posted yet. And it says, the future is inevitable. And it's damn right. It's happening. So that's
the inevitable future is happening September 6th.
Exactly. Literally, it's happening. Nothing anyone can do about it.
Thank you so much, Ian. Really appreciate your time. I'll speak to you again soon.
Take care. I'll see you soon.
Thank you.